Hello, and welcome once again to Out to Lunch, the place where stunning food oils the wheels of conversation. Today, I am talking to a Southeast London rapper, broadcaster, and entrepreneur. He's the most successful British rap artist in UK chart history and the first to reach platinum sales status with his US debut single, Written in the Stars. His single, Pass Out, won an Ivor Novello and was recently named BBC One Extra's favourite track of the past 20 years. He's also won multiple MOBOs and Brit Awards, but it doesn't stop there. My guest has his own record label, he's toured with Rihanna, been on the pyramid stage with Snoop at Glastonbury, and made three studio albums. He's also a prominent figure in British fashion and has been named Best Dressed Man by GQ magazine. He's into property, he's a design enthusiast, presenting extraordinary extensions for Channel 4, and it won't surprise you to know that he's now moved into food. And while he may have dropped the word temper from his name, well, he knows how to talk up a storm. It's the multi-talented Tiny.
Who's on the mic right now? Jay Rayner. I'm gonna come right here, Jay Rayner.
For this episode of Out to Lunch, I'm in London's Shoreditch by a restaurant called Manteca. It opened in November of 2021 or thereabouts, although it had pop-ups and residences all over London. It's a kind of Italian nose-to-tail place. Gutsy, big flavours, massive. When I reviewed it, I loved it. And I like introducing other people to it. And today, I get to introduce Tiny to it. We have a table downstairs.
How are you doing, Jay?
Very well.
Pleasure to meet you, my friend.
Good to meet you.
Yes, man.
Have a seat.
Lovely.
This is Jessica.
Nice yes. To meet you.
Hello, Jessica. How are you? Nice to meet you. You all right?
Very good. Thank you. Do you like some water?
I would, some still water.
I think it's fair to say you're in one of the hottest restaurants in London right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, do you know what? How long has it been here? Because
November.
Since November. Wow, in okay. Incredible.
Yeah.
I've spent quite a lot of time in this Shoreditch, Hackney area. It's great to be here.
Brilliant. We'll have a look and I'll come back to you. I was thinking...
Yes.
Looking for points of connection...
Go for it,
...between...
Yeah.
You, Tiny, and me, a white middle-aged 55-year-old bloke.
You'll be surprised.
Jazz musician. Well, I don't think I will. And I realised that one of the clearest first points of connection is the noble chicken chain Morley's.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about your experiences, Jake.
Well, you know, I've got a couple of sons. I live in South London. I live in Brixton.
Lovely. Beautiful part of London.
In fact, the video of Not Letting Go... Mm-hmm. You could have stopped at my house for a cup of tea between the two sites by the Dexter's Adventure Playground and the Lido in Brockwell Park.
That's a real point of connection, yeah.
So, literally, that video is shot, you know, near my house. Explain to anybody who doesn't know what Morley's is.
So, Morley's is like the chicken shop for the people, especially if you're a South Londoner. Depending on where you live in London, north, east, south, west, everywhere will have their kind of staple chicken shop. So I'm not going to act like I know all of them, but I know that northwest is like Sam's Chicken. I know that you can access perfect fried chicken in certain places, but for South London and south, east, west specifically, you get Morley's. And Morley's is kind of looks a little bit like a KFC ripoff, a little bit from the outside.
Although it isn't, we must say that.
Although it isn't. Once you get inside, you realise that it's so much more and that it kind of has this identity of its own, this flavour of its own, and this culture of its own.
Yeah, I think the culture thing's really interesting because I've always thought of them as third spaces.
Yeah,
where
people go out and hang out. Yeah, literally.
There's a...
Congregate.
A new exhibition has opened inside. Do you know about the Museum of Migration in Lewisham?
No, I do not.
Well, it's... what it sounds like, and they've done this exhibition on business leaders who were immigrants to the UK, and there's
amazing.
A whole wall about Morley's.
I need to go and see that.
Celebrating what they are. I should say, we are in a private dining room, but we are in quite a noisy private dining room for the microphone, so occasionally you'll hear they have wines on tap.
I'll do that.
Oh, yeah, here it goes.
Is that it going now?
Yeah, and
you will set that up.
No, I didn't. And eventually when it stops, there's a hiss as they release the...
There we go.
It's like a train coming in. So every now and then, that's what you'll hear.
Well, what's that thing? Is it ASMR or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a bit of that for the...
Did you feel
listeners.
A tingle? Did you get a tingle?
Yeah, I felt a little bit of butterflies, I think. Thank you very much.
Some pasta scraps, so in the meantime, you can enjoy it.
Amazing. Do you want some, Jay?
Well, you start.
Yeah,
you
cheers, man.
I'll tell you what, try and have a look at this menu and come up with a list of things.
Okay. This lamb caught sea bass crudo looks really good. The new season asparagus looks amazing. The miso roasted cabbage even sounds interesting as well.
So why don't we do that as a kind of first round?
Yeah.
Do you do pasta?
Yes, of course. Yeah, yeah.
Let's say the rigatoni with the kale sauce, chili and parmesan.
That sounds pretty
good.
Which
size would you like to get?
Do you know what? Let's get two large, one of those and one of the fazoletti, which is with a duck ragu.
Ooh.
Trust me.
I've never tried fazoletti before.
It's like a really broad ribbon.
Okay. Ribbon pasta, nice.
Yeah.
Okay. And this Angus beef also looks pretty good.
Yeah, so let's get one of the skirt as well. So we're going three rounds by the sounds of things.
That sounds fantastic.
With some of the roasted potatoes.
Yeah. Would you like some greens as well?
Yeah, do you have seasonal greens?
Yeah. Any?
Yeah, perfect.
Brilliant. When you were growing up, because you were, until you were 12, you were in on the Peckham Estate?
Yeah, I was on the Peckham Estate. So South London, I was born and bred. And then after 12, my parents decided that Peckham at the time was too violent for raising their four kids, and so decided to move a little bit more into the suburbs, and we settled in a place called Plumstead next to Woolwich.
Your folks, they were immigrants from Nigeria?
Yes, correct.
And the immigrant culture is sort of get on, move up.
Yeah.
What were they telling you they wanted you to do?
If you're not a doctor, a lawyer...
And Dr. Dre doesn't count, does
it? Dr. Dre doesn't count, Jay. It doesn't count. I thought that, you know, I thought maybe, but no. I was 12. I somehow, at that age, decided I wanted to be a rapper.
Did you announce at any point to your parents?
Yeah.
Mom, Dad, I know what I want to be.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, in all fairness, it would probably be the same way that, like, a Gen Z that's 12 right now would say, Mom or Dad, I want to be, like, an influencer or a gamer. That would be this potential vehicle to kind of rocket launch you into this new existence, this new kind of socio-economic life with this new lifestyle, being able to like...
So you were looking at the lifestyle as much as...
Yeah, I was looking at the lifestyle and a way out as much as I'm actually talented at this and I think I could do this at a very high level, which was also, it was kind of 50-50 between the two.
When did you first started doing stuff, rapping? What a production.
So when I was 16, there was this DIY TV channel on Sky, and it was called Channel U at the time. I think it's called Channel AKA now. Send us some money with your video, and if you're lucky, we'll get it on. So I'd basically done one of these videos, and it done really well there. So
which track was that?
It was a song called Wifey.
Right. Wifey is really cute.
Thank you.
It's a really sweet song by, as you say, you were 16 or 17, and you're pretty much telling a particular girl...
I love her.
You love her?
Yeah. Within rap and grime, more specifically, which it was at the time, the lyrics were primarily constructed in kind of like 8-bar verses, if not 16-bar verses, mostly like one-line flows. So you'd say the same thing at the end. So, who's on the mic right now? Jay Rayner. I'm going to come right here. Jay Rayner. It was very kind of elementary. To a certain degree, not all of it. Obviously, there were some incredible poets, incredible lyricists, but within grime and the energy of grime, you know, live to get, you know, the DJ to wheel up the song, essentially, which is what we'd say, reload the song. This is not what my spirit necessarily connects with. Like, instead of on the block with all my mates, I'd much rather be with some girl experiencing Greenwich Park, going through some woods, finding something new and having this nice intimate moment. And it just so happened that that's what on an underground level resonated with a lot of people.
Wait, 2006, Wifey happens, becomes an underground hit. And then 2010, it all explodes. 4 years.
Yeah.
I mean, the life of a young man, as you were, that's a very long time.
Very long time, yeah.
What's the moment for you when things start to change? You signed to Parlophone in 2009.
Signed to Parlophone in 2009. I would say just prior to that, so I made a mixtape called Hood Economics. I read a little bit on Adam Smith, The Wealth of Nations, and I don't know how this ties into grime music, but I was kind of like...
I mean, it should be said for anybody who doesn't know, Adam Smith, The Wealth of Nations, is pretty much the ideological underpinning of the whole of capitalism.
Capitalism, exactly. So, yeah, he basically taught me how to become more of a capitalist or have more of a capitalistic way of thinking. Where I come from, there's this big saying of, like, crabs in the barrel, right? So loads of people trying to climb out, and then as you climb out, someone pulls you back down. So for me, this was the antithesis of it, which is basically... Go as far as you can. This is what I got from it. I'm obviously clearly paraphrasing because it's not how it was written. But just do your thing.
I'm loving this. I want to paraphrase The Wealth of Nations of by Adam Smith.
Yeah, do your thing. Think of your pursuits in a kind of like single-minded way. Once you achieve success or once you have reaped the rewards, the other people in your community, in your society, will see what you've done and that will encourage them and motivate them to do more. And then it inspired me to make this mixtape called Hood Economics, where basically I was gonna adopt the hood version of this, like the street version, where, okay, we're all trying to figure out how to make it out of this like trap, ghetto, be a catalyst for some sort of reaction. That was basically the narrative of the mixtape. That did quite well, and then it went from there.
Sibas crudo with some fennel, cucumber,
thank you very much.
And olive oil.
Thank you.
Yeah, even though some of my family was inexperienced.
There's more coming, just because it's quite a small dish.
It looks very pretty, though.
It does look nice. Yeah. There's this moment in 2010 at Glastonbury.
Yeah.
You're on stage with Snoop Dogg.
I am, yeah.
Now, that must have been pretty full on, because I'm imagining, given how long Snoop Dogg has been around,
yeah.
Is he Snoop Dogg? What is he at the moment? He was
a lion, then he changed back to a dog, I think.
The artist always known as Snoop. Yeah. How about if I describe that?
Exactly.
Someone you must have been listening to since you were knee high.
Absolutely.
Was that the point that you felt, this is it, I'm finally arrived, or was it just part of the journey at that one?
It was such a high point in my life at that time. But I wouldn't say it was the this is it. It was probably one of the most surreal moments in my life. For me, it just felt like, oh, this is the beginning of it. Yes.
This is the beginning.
Yeah, this is the beginning. All right, it's on now. Yeah, okay. I'm on stage with Snoop. We're on the pyramid stage, Glastonbury 2010, one song in. Okay, all right, this is it. Yeah, here we go. That's kind of what my mind was
like. One second, Selena, am I right that you were there?
Yeah, I was at the back.
Oi, Selena! Oi, oi! Yeah, it was such a surreal moment.
How was it looking out at a crowd that size?
I had never seen a crowd that size in my life.
At that point in 2010, had you already started thinking about other ventures? I mean, I know that you were helping other artists, producing all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, but the only thing, like you said, Jay, is just, just a wider kind of like record label infrastructure. That sort of thing. That was as far as it as I was thinking at the time. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
So we've now got the asparagus, which, ooh, they look pretty, don't they?
Yeah, very pretty. Very green as well.
Wow. Very, very properly green asparagus.
Mm-hmm.
As food has now arrived,
yeah,
I am interested in your relationship with food because it is not casual, yours.
Mm-mm.
I think you're, this is a very grand question. I was kind of interested as to why you wanted to do this.
I'm not going to lie, I went on your Spotify,
yeah,
and I looked at all of your out to lunches, and I was very impressed.
Okay.
I was very impressed, to say the least. And I was like, you know what? Even though I feel like raps and what I've been working on in the food space,
yeah,
isn't necessarily of this sort of like fine dining kind of aesthetic, it would just be amazing to talk to you.
But food, as I say, is clearly a thing. You've mentioned it, Wraps, which is your chicken brand, available via Deliveroo,
yep,
from a number of kitchens around London, isn't it?
Yep, that's how we're moving, that's how we're starting.
I had it on Friday night.
Mm, wicked, what did you think?
I really liked it. Good. I thought you'd made some very idiosyncratic choices.
Mm.
Because, let's be clear, there is an awful lot of chicken offered on Deliveroo
at
the moment.
Yes, there is.
Particularly in the Brixton area. let's be absolutely
I think
clear.
It's the most popular food, isn't it, on Deliveroo? It's the number one.
I think it is.
And then pizza second.
But it was things like, and it's Wraps, R-A-P-S.
Yeah.
That's
what you did. The pan, double entendre,
The choices, we're going to get really granular here.
Mm-hmm.
The pickles, mm-hmm, which is shaved fennel,
yeah,
rather than what people necessarily associate, like gherkins or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The coleslaw, and there's an awful lot of coleslaw out there. Yours is stuffed full of fresh green herbs.
A little bit more fancy, yeah.
It's coriander and dill in there and things like that. Why did you want to do this?
Food, like you said, is a big part of culture in general, big part of British culture, but also a big part of, like, African culture. It just really is.
Yeah, when you were growing up, was it all jollof rice?
Yeah, lots. Come on, Jay. You know, like lots of jollof rice, lots of assorted meat stew.
Did you do Nigerian barbecue, which a mate of mine is obsessed
with?
Suya.
We did all of that. Still do, and then very close to the Caribbean community. So of course, experiencing lots of jerk and this and that, and so just having a great relationship with food. Like I've explained to a lot of people, our first step in entrepreneurialism, usually within our kind of like work, when I'm thinking of the working class environment I grew up in, would be to go and set up a restaurant. It was always in the back of my mind that when I got the opportunity, I would want to do something food related. The guy who I am in business with for Raps, he has this business called Kitchen Ventures, but not only that, he has a restaurant called The Rum Kitchen, which is also in Brixton.
Yeah, I know.
So, at the top of the pandemic, he reached out to me and he was like, I've gone into the dark kitchen business. Would you like to work on one together? I could have sat down, if I was wired a different way, I could have probably just sat in my studio. But my brain was still moving at 100 miles per hour when everything had stopped. So all the other things that I'd always wanted to do, this was like a perfect opportunity. So Johnny reached out about creating a concept. I was like, you know what? I've got a concept in my head already. It's called Raps. Like, let's work on this. We worked with this incredible chef called Big Hass. So when you're talking about all the details and the way that the pickle selection is presented and the coleslaw, I would almost just spew stuff out. And then he would be the one that would like make it all beautiful and contextualize it all.
Did you enjoy the process?
Loved it. Again, height of the pandemic, lucky I was able to go to some of Johnny's restaurants. He would secretly open them. We'd go in, we'd have access to the kitchen. Big Hass would be coming out of the kitchen and bringing out different things. We'd all be trying it. No, you need to add a little bit more tomato in this. Less pickle in this, changed it. It was so fun.
So here we go, fazzoletti with duck ragu.
Lovely, that looks
and
great.
And here our pasta vegetarian with queso, chili on the side and parmesan.
Looks so good.
Enjoy.
Thank you. It looks a bit like a rigatoni and it's extraordinarily green.
Yeah, everything is so green here. All the green is really green. How are you guys doing that? Wow.
And now, as you say, all this other stuff is going on.
Mm-hmm.
What's driving it? Because you don't seem to say no to anything. And I really admire that.
Yeah.
You know, you do a TV series on portrait painting.
Mm-hmm.
The fashion industry stuff is really intriguing. We should get into that.
Yeah, we will.
Food, all over my territory.
Yeah.
Do you ever think to yourself, I can't do that because I don't have the skill set? Or does that thought never occur to you?
Never. But for me, to be honest with you, Jay, it's just, as a human being, I want to fulfill, I want to, like, leave this earth, hopefully in 100 years or whatever, like, or when I'm 100
or whatever.
That's a reasonable
aim. Die at 133 or whatever,
I mean, who knows? Technology, you know? No. I see what all these billionaires are trying to do now. They're trying to preserve their lives and stuff. You never know. But for me, I wanna go knowing that I fulfilled my absolute full potential as a human being, my full potential in every way possible. That, for me, is... like, for me, the pinnacle of existence. That's the way I think I'd be able to, like, sleep at night, knowing that there was nothing else left in the tank. You did every single thing that you could do. Again, to put everything into context, when you come from where I've come from, which is a stark opposite place to where you come from, you don't have many people saying, would you be up for this? For me, every opportunity that's come my way, I haven't said yes to every opportunity, but the things that I resonate with, the things that I believe in, the things that I feel confident with, or if it makes sense, why am I saying no? Do you get what I mean? Why?
Then I'm going to have to ask you, what have you said no to?
I've definitely turned down loads of things. Sometimes I've turned down things even stupidly just because I've been so busy and been so tired. Like, again, I had once someone pulled out of a festival. I won't say which festival it was, and they were like, we want to give you, because they pulled out last minute, we want to give you like $500,000.
Yeah, okay. I'm just waving at you to get the number out of your mouth.
Yeah, $500,000 to headline it. And I was like, nah, I'm busy. I can't do it. Or I said something stupid like, no, because they pulled out, so I'm not a true headline.
Did you come over a bit grand then? Kind of a bit ego, unless I am at your first choice, I'm not doing it.
In the last decade, remember, I've matured from like being 21 years old to like however old I am now. In the last decade, now I find myself in so many surreal environments and spaces where there's people that, and this is no disrespect to them, this is with the utmost respect, yeah, where there's people with like generational wealth or privilege, or their parent was this person, their parent was that person. Some of them have this incredible story that most people are interested in, but actually when you're in that room, like, most people are not interested in that story anymore. Someone was giving me an example the other day. There's the Himalayas, yeah, and you can, me and you could call a guy and he could get a helicopter and take us up there, right? Okay. And me and you would land on the peak of it, and we'd have all our gear and we'd take a selfie, right? Tiny and Jay, Himalayas. Bang, take that. Then there's this other guy. But do you know what's different about this other guy?
He climbed
it. Exactly. He climbed it. And so no matter how many places we go to and we're like, look at the picture of us at the peak of the Himalayas, when he walks into the room, his story's always going to be more interesting.
Hello, it's Ollie here. I'm the executive producer on Out to Lunch. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, one of the relationships I'm proudest of in my life is with my daughters. They're not quite the age to go for fancy lunches with celebs yet, but we do enjoy our family dinners together in relative harmony. You know, give us time, that they are still quite young. But this takes work, and it's a mistake to think that relationships have to be easy to be right. The best relationships come out of learning to live with each other and keeping our sense of humour, even when food is spilt all over the table or dinner's not to everyone's liking. It can be really tricky, but therapy can help you with those skills. You can work through parenting challenges, explore seeing eye to eye as a couple, and work through your relationship with yourself too. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's flexible and you can switch therapists at any time, as that's a relationship that needs to be the right fit too. Become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for one or not. Visit betterhelp.com/outtolunch today and get 10% off your first month.
Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered, but we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere, and no one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 Days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, two other things I've got to ask you about.
Mm-hmm.
Clothes.
Okay.
Fashion.
Yes.
What's the interest? I mean, you are dressed fine today. I mean very fine.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a bright orange...
Yeah,
sweatshirt.
Yeah. Thank you.
What's on the front?
It says Daily Paper. They're like a Dutch brand, actually.
Well, when you step out, you've got to look good, innit? You've got to feel good. I'm a black kid from like a inner city council estate. Like, we had things and ideologies and principles like your Sunday best. Do you get what I mean? Being able to go to school, I don't know, with like an iron shirt, and like the way my mum would make us iron our shirts the night before, like taking pride in your appearance was always like a big thing in my household.
Do you still iron your own shirts?
Yes. I take great pleasure in that, actually. Quite therapeutic. It's relaxing. Yeah, I love it. I think it's a combination of wanting to stand out from my age group that I was performing to, the kind of inherent nature that you will be profiled as a black person wherever you go,
yeah,
in any establishment. Even the other day, I was in Venice for the Venice Biennale. I don't even want to tell you what I think I heard somebody say. Like,
I can imagine.
Yeah, I was in one of the poshest restaurants in Venice, hoodie, denim jacket, and pink jeans, right?
But it should be clear, in the middle of the biggest contemporary art exhibition the world has.
Exactly.
The Venice Biennale.
Yeah. It's not a joke.
Everybody comes from everywhere.
Exactly.
You're not a freak in that world.
Thank you, bro. And everyone is creative and expressive. Exactly. He may not have said what I think he said, but if he did, and I'm just going to spare the people listening from, because I might be wrong, but if he did, I'm an artist, I'm fully confident in myself, I'm accomplished, so it was no skin off my nose. But I dread to think if you were just like, I don't know, you lived there or you were just going there on holiday with your family, just trying to get on with your life, and you heard somebody make such a snide remark about you or your appearance and their perception of who you might be, where you might be from because of that, how it would make you feel. Like, it would crush you. It would knock your confidence. Yeah, for me, I think appearance is important, and I think actually, depending on where you're from and your race and what you have been through, I think appearance is even more important. Obviously, taking this all back to fashion, I just feel like fashion has been a great way to express myself and show people like higher taste levels. I do think it's quite unfortunate now, again, like looking at things deeper, that, and I understand also why, but I do think it's unfortunate that a lot of the fashion is European fashion.
Yeah.
And I do think it's unfortunate that there is a kind of psychological thing whereby, regardless of where you're from, even if you're European yourself, you know, there are certain items that are status symbols that if you have it, you exude. I don't know, you might be in the south of France somewhere, Jay, do you get what I mean? And if you have on a certain watch or you're wearing like a certain satchel, a certain eyewear brand, people will go, oh yeah, you know, when you go into that, your favorite restaurant that you love, they go, oh, Jay, da, 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 da. And it works. Like, we all, there's always things like that. But for me, I think it's unfortunate that it's just purely European fashion, because obviously when you're not European, it can give one a complex of like, okay, I have to aspire to all of these things. And hopefully one day that will change. But yes, to fast forward, definitely fashion was a combination of standing out from the crowd and also just trying to show people my taste levels in a different way.
What about the taxidermy?
So the taxidermy, I basically came into it. You know, this is my own, this is the little bit of inheritance or luck that I found. And I know lots of people have different opinions on taxidermy, but mate,
I'm here for it.
You know what? And I didn't put it there, mate. It was Alexander McQueen. I was...
All right, so let's explain. You bought the house that was the late Alexander McQueen's. And so were the stuffed animals already in there?
Yeah, they were already in there. Well, one was already in there. I got another one.
All right, okay. Yeah. So it came with the house?
Yeah, it came with the house.
Which was the one that came with the house?
A giraffe, like 2 meter long giraffe head. And then he designed this incredible, like, light-fitting structure, which was made of like tusks and horns and all of this stuff. So that all came with the house, and they wanted to actually get rid of it. And I was like, if you get rid of it, I'm not going to buy the house.
So that's a reasonable encouragement. Have you met Darren Brown ever? Who has also been a guest on this fine podcast.
No.
I think you should. He's got an enormous taxidermy collection.
Is it? I'd love to. He seems like he would have an enormous taxidermy collection. But I would love to. I'd love to meet him. I think maybe I've met Dynamo. Does that count? That doesn't count.
Did he do good magic for you?
He did great magic for me.
Did he?
Yeah, we used to be neighbours, actually, in Hampstead, actually.
You and Dynamo?
Yeah.
That's kind of a stellar street, isn't it?
Yeah. That's good fun. Good fun on the high street. People used to get a good eye for.
Excellent.
I'm sorry, should I clear the table? Are you ready for the next course?
We've ordered a steak as well. You're still going. Well, I'll tell you what. Do you want some more of these?
Mm-hmm.
The meat.
Really good. Really good, by the way. Thanks.
So lead that one.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you. We've recently lost Jamal Edwards.
Yeah.
And we're also Virgil.
Yeah, Abloh, yeah. And loads of people. Skibbity. Too many to mention. I'll probably forget. DMX, not too long
ago. I'm imagining that you felt the loss of Jamal Edwards very strongly.
Absolutely, yeah.
Was he significant in getting your music out there?
Yeah, everyone from my generation kind of onwards, he was significant. My music was already out there beforehand, but Jamal's platform, SBTV, was so instrumental to so many people's careers.
Does the loss of them, far too young, I mean, these are guys in their 30s.
Yeah.
Did that give you pause for thought?
It definitely makes you question your mortality when you see people that are near enough the same age as you and younger, like Jamal, you know, God rest his soul, is younger than me. Yeah, it's definitely very humbling, and obviously condolences to his family. I've really kind of tweeted and expressed how I feel about the whole thing. But yeah, I'm guessing it's like anyone at any age. It just makes you think about your life, and it makes you, I guess, feel grateful for what you do have, and you know, some certain things that you take for granted every single day. And me being one of those people that is constantly trying to fulfill my potential and think, what could I be doing better? Be humble, and just be kind and work hard. And I think that's the other point, just being kind. When you see, again, where he'd come from, and obviously, I would say no, by no means in a way like you, but he had also come from a bit of privilege in the sense that his mum was, all, I think his mum is on Loose Women, or she,
yeah.
So his mum was already kind of in the media space from before. But what really struck me is just everyone's testimony of Jamal, and like
everyone. Yeah, he was a lovely guy.
Yeah, just so consistently and so much for people and so much about trying to help people and elevate people. And it's beautiful, and it just made me think, or I'm sure it should make anyone think, when you go, how do you want to be remembered? You know, what do you want people to say about you?
From the perspective of where you are now, do you think there is still the space and the opportunities for kids growing up on the East Peckham Estates?
Yeah.
To break through in the same way, or are there just different ways?
No, I would say absolutely there are. And I would say, if anything, here, more than ever, because of tech. I'm still trying to get my head around, you know, certain elements of tech and investing, but which is why I do want to put any of my investment efforts into that space, because if it wasn't for tech, I wouldn't be here. But these kids now, what's so amazing for them is that if you've got a good product or any bit of interesting content, once it goes online, there's no telling where it could end up. I have Nigerian heritage. So last year, again, during the pandemic, there was all this weird content that was online. And there was this kid, and he was in Nigeria, and he just had like a little like boombox speaker type thing, and all he was doing was rifting and toasting, just vibes, melodies. Within 24 hours, he had 2 to 3 of the biggest artists in the world, don't necessarily need to say all their names, but reaching out to him, texting him, reaching out to his manager to see if they could fly him over to LA, this and that and that and that. When I actually got to Nigeria, someone said it happened so quick that the managers got so greedy and tried to lock him into the situation so quickly that it all fell on its face. But the point I'm making now is that it does not matter where you are from in the world. If you've got a camera phone and access to the internet, your life could change.
When you say when you got to Nigeria, did you go to try and get this kid as well?
No.
Or did you just happen to be going?
Yeah, I just happened to be going. I went for a different reason. But on going there, he was mentioned. And I was like, oh yeah, what happened to that guy? I do feel for this Gen Z time that we're in now as well, because as quick as it can come, it can go. That's great. That's crazy, man.
Do you, with all the things you got going on,
yeah,
feel that you must attend to the music as well? Will that always be a part of you?
Always. It's the core. It's the central overriding force. It's the reason why I'm here. It's the foundation of everything. So always, always.
Because it gives you a certain kind of joy?
Yeah, because it gives me a certain kind of joy, and I actually like to think that I am given a certain kind of joy and contributing a certain type of joy to the world. Most of my songs are feel-good records that you just need to be in the field moshing out.
And yeah, you love a collaboration as well.
Love a collaboration.
Jess Glynn,
Ellie Goulding, Dizzy Rascal, 2 Chainz, Big Sean, J. Cole.
What's that about? Do you just like working with other people? Does it give you more pleasure than doing it by yourself?
Gives me more pleasure, and also it's that thing of like, when you come from a place where like you just weren't considered, or like to get to this place where people want to work with you, like, mate, I want to go into the studio with as many people, like whether it's Chris Martin, whether it's that, but I want to see how they work. That part of it is as exciting to me as like making the song.
I don't know who listens to this podcast, but is there anybody in particular you haven't managed to work with yet that you would like to work?
There's many people. But before, I used to have this kind of wish list that was almost a hit list. But now, for me, I think whoever I naturally gel with and connect with and resonate with, you could be like a new artist that no one's ever heard of. You could be Bono.
Well done.
Yes. Yeah. Have you reached out to Mr. Bono? He's sick of his own music, he said.
He's actually working with a friend of mine, actually, who I just collaborated with, called Martin Garrix. He's like a Dutch DJ phenomena that has been like popping since he was 16. He's like 25 now, but from what I understand, Martin produced, because you know, you two, they did the UEFA Euro, so Martin Garrix produced that, and I think they're working with him now. So yeah, maybe, you know, he's one degree of separation away, you never know.
Now we've still got Steak heading our way.
Whoa, bring it on.
But for now, I will say, Tiny, actually, I've got to ask you, you dumped Temper.
I did, yeah.
Any particular reason?
Yeah, I just don't feel like it anymore. Yeah, I just felt like I wanted to be something different, slightly different.
Well, Tiny, all I want to say is thank you for letting me take you out to lunch.
I really have enjoyed this so much. I should have put a nicer fragrance on for you.
You smell delicious.
Thank
from
you.
Here.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you.
What a brilliant chat. Thank you so much to Tiny and to the place to be right now, Manteca in East London's Shoreditch. Their food is spectacular. I love it very, very much. If you loved the show, well, please do follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please do share, comment, and rate us. It really helps us to make more. Out to Lunch is a Something Else and Jay Rayner production. The music was written, arranged, and performed by me, Jay Rayner, and Robert Rickenberg. The recording engineer was Josh Gibbs, and the mix engineer, Gulliver Tickle. Assistant producers are Anya Das and Bethany Hockham. The producer is Selena Ream, and the executive producer is Darby Doris. Next time, it's the brilliant chef, Angela Harnett. I remember once I did a big piece about why aren't there more women in kitchens, and I interviewed you, and you said, because they've got more sense.
Is that what I said? Yeah, probably.